Comments made on the Serotalk podcast are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com,
a production of Serotech Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Michael Loff.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 69 for June 6, 2011. This is Michael Loff.
I'm Ricky Inger.
I'm Joe Stonkamp.
And I'm Mike Calvo, I think.
Aha, there he is. He's magical.
Magical.
Amazing.
Amazing. And I brought it, and it's all in the apps.
The apps. It's all in the apps.
I think you also contain stainless steel bands.
Not this time.
Wait. I got to say, before we even get started, you know what really sucks is Mr. Jobs gets all the money, and he's been stealing my ideas for 10 years.
Well, we got a lot of stuff to cover today. We got three announcements out of the Apple WWDC, the Developers Conference. We're also going to talk about Windows 8. A lot of exciting stuff going there. So why don't we start with iOS 5, and they showed 10 features today. They say there will be a total of 200, and of course, we'll provide links to that in the show notes once we see this magical list of 200 enhancements to the next version of iOS. So where do we start? Notifications seems to be, I believe, where they launched from. I guess automatic updates for weather and stocks, and you can swipe down and get into this component of it and kind of see what's going on there.
Yeah, I like this. I think it's now you're not going to see something pop up that interrupts whatever you're doing and you have to dismiss it before you go on. And right now, whenever you unlock your screen or whenever you wake your phone up, you see a list of notifications that you've missed. But as soon as you actually unlock the phone, those go away. So this gives you a way to review all that stuff at your leisure. That's pretty cool.
Now, I would like to add for the record, and I don't mean to sound curmudgeonly, and you may hear me say this a couple of times, but that has been available in Android for just a little while now.
Well, there's a whole lot of stuff that came out of this that they were extremely excited about, and oh, look how revolutionary, and it's not particularly. They've done a lot that they sort of had to do in order to be taken seriously, and they've done it in their own Apple way. So if you're looking for new revolutionary stuff, not so much in this update, but still, there's some good stuff to be excited about. Like, finally, over-the-air updates, after people have been screaming for that forever, they kind of go, oh, look, we had this great idea. Nobody ever thought of it, but guess what? You can get some app updates over Wi-Fi, and they are doing Delta updates. So it's incremental. You don't have to download the entire app again, only what's different about the app and the update. So that saves time, certainly.
The cool thing, I think, is that you're going to be able to buy an iDevice, an iOS device from the store, turn it on, and immediately be able to register it, whether if there's a Wi-Fi network or I guess if there's 3G, I don't know, it wasn't specified. But that's going to be huge because a lot of us have not bought iOS devices for senior members of our family for that particular reason. Because my mother-in-law, for example, loves our iPad, but she can't get her head around iTunes. She doesn't know Windows. So, but she can get her head around the iPad, and it's just not standalone enough at this point in its existence to be able to be a device that she could say, oh yeah, you know, this is all I need. And I think that with iOS 5, that's going to be a dream that's been realized. And the reality is, I heard earlier today somebody say, you know, the biggest thing that really struck me about this whole ecosystem and the whole iPad experiences, he was walking through an airport and he saw a 3-year-old playing with an iPad and an 80-year-old man playing with an iPad. And that, I think, is one of the most exciting things about Apple, regardless of how I feel as a geek. And I think that my cynicism is very geek-oriented in many respects. And I look at things from not only a community point, but also kind of as a from a business perspective. You know, so I found a lot of the stuff today that they announced to be anticlimactic, but at the same time, it's stuff that the platform needed, and I think it is going to, you know, impact their market share.
I think it had to get away from iTunes. I think at some point you have to cut the cord, and you have to get away from this standalone app that everybody had to go to. I mean, how many people ran right out and bought iPad 2s but couldn't do anything with them in Starbucks unless they had brought their laptop or their MacBook with them because they had to hook it up to iTunes and go through the whole activation process? This was something that they had to do. And in fact, I think a lot of the announcements around iOS are kind of the ability to get away from syncing to iTunes or getting away from the concept that you have to have this standalone app. And I think that's a great thing. Of course, again, that's a Google thing.
But does it ruin the uniqueness of the device? You know, doesn't it make it like everybody else now? I mean, because you've got Windows Mobile 7 that does, Windows Phone 7 that does the same thing. Now, I mean, all these platforms are finally doing the cordless or wireless connection.
Like everybody else in a good way. I mean, getting away from iTunes can't be anything but a good thing.
Touché.
Yeah, but then you talked about using iTunes for wireless transfer, like overnight.
Well, they're going to try. I mean, dude, they're going to try and beat that horse as much as they can. They're going to suck that lemon dry. But the reality is that ultimately, I think everything's going to move to HTML5. And I think that and for the reasons that we've talked about before, I think that universal design is going to come to all of these devices, not because it's the right thing to do, not because it's better for blind people, not for any of those reasons, but because, you know, who the hell wants to build an infrastructure business on something? Let's say you looked at Android a year ago, and I'm not talking about just in the blindness community, I'm talking about in the mainstream. You looked at Android a year ago, 8% of the market. This year, 1 year later, 34% of the market. Now, who'd have guessed? Yeah, and growing. Who'd have guessed a year ago? In the same time frame, Apple, 14-point-something% last year, 15-point-something% this year. I know that they jilted the numbers, and they did it by including, you know, tablets and things like that this morning in the review. But once, when you really start to sort out the numbers, you know, Apple is a mature platform that is not growing by leaps and bounds, the iOS platform. So, you know, ultimately, everybody's going to move over to HTML5. All of these things are going to start to seem the same. Where are they going to start? You know, where's the benefit to one company versus another? I mean, it's going to be great for the consumer, but we're flattening the marketplace.
Well, and also, how long are you going to develop a standalone application that doesn't necessarily drive revenue back to your company? When I had made the comment on Twitter today about iTunes kind of going away, somebody said, yeah, but it's a great player. Well, you know, great. There's a Windows Media Player. There's QuickTime, but you know, running iTunes from that, there's no money there, and not when you've got
the friggin' 200 meg player.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of revenue generation, will any of you use, or do you care about this newsstand that they're building in that will let you purchase and have newspapers and magazines download overnight and be there for your morning coffee or the morning commute?
I've yet to see one accessible offering from a magazine on any iOS platform, on any iOS product. I've seen iBooks, but not any of the magazines. Have you seen anything different, Ricky? I might be wrong.
No, I don't use subscriptions in that way. They were going through all these different magazines who had kind of jumped on the bandwagon, and it was a
bandwagon,
a huge bandwagon.
Is that stainless steel bandwagon?
Yes.
That's on the apps.
It was a huge list, but no, I've never subscribed to any of those things. I don't know if they all have their different ways of reading this stuff, because I know that some of these magazines have their own apps. But again, this is sort of a Me Too thing. If you have a Kindle, you subscribe to a magazine or a newspaper, and it grabs it wirelessly for you, and you just wake up one morning and there it is.
Yeah,
so
it is.
Again, this is not revolutionary, but I think it's something they had to do.
Here's my conspiracy theory. All right, here we go.
Oh, of course.
Disney owns Marvel Comics. Disney is, you know, good friends with Steve Jobs. Jobs was on the board of Pixar. Disney and Marvel both have announced reboots of their comics. And there is a big push to get comics to go to electronic media. Newsstand is a perfect way of picking up your comics and some other internal type media that would work just really well for something like this. So to me, all of the timing here was really interesting, because I think there's a couple of things like Marvel and a couple of other kind of medias that will work really well for Newsstand. I don't see myself using it.
Considering we live in a world that's more focused on entertainment than news, unless it's the entertaining news, I think you might be right, Joe. You might be onto something.
Could very well be.
Yeah, I just felt a little bit like the stars had aligned in the right way for this. And I think that's what you're going to see, is a lot of entertainment go that direction.
The one feature that I was really excited about, and yes, Android people, I know you have this already, but it's the Reminders app, and they're including things like location-based reminders. So if you have something set up to, remind me to buy such and such when I'm at the grocery store, and you drive into that parking lot and you get this reminder, that's pretty cool.
How many people are going to get pissed off at their phone at the grocery store? Shut up already! Stop!
What about...
I got it.
Across. Remember the milk, though. I mean, does that take away the third-party ecosystem from guys who come up with a better idea?
Of course. That's how all these companies are going to start working, man.
Apple did a lot to probably anger some developers today. Remember the milk, Safari Reader, bye-bye, Instapaper. We love what you did, so we took it for our own, and now you can...
The camera button, the volume button on the camera.
Right.
Oh, that one annoys me to no end, because that was in a third-party app that was pulled from the marketplace and then came back mysteriously about a couple months ago. And then everybody speculated, wait a minute, why did this camera app, why did it come back all of a sudden? And now we know. It's because Apple already went, you know what? That's a great idea. Let's do it. That was kind of creepy. I don't know.
Scary. Now your wife, instead of having to call and nag you, she can just send reminders every time you pull into every place you happen to be going, everything you need to do.
Yes, yes.
Yes, yes.
I said if you went by such and such,
I told you not to go there.
What are you doing by her house?
Oh, but yeah. How long does that become into something like Groupon or somebody like that who then ties that information together? I saw you pulled into Kentucky Fried Chicken. There's a special today because you pulled into a KFC. You might not know it.
The wireless. What is that called now? Somebody remind me. What is this short near field communication?
Yeah, NFC.
Right. I didn't see anything today with NFC. Was there any mention of NFC stuff?
I didn't hear it.
The rumor is that it's not coming in iPhone 5 or 4S or whatever they're going to call it. The rumor is that it's in the next iPhone. If all is to be believed in the tea leaves and Apple's rumor mill, as Michael likes to remind us about it, is that the next iPhone is going to be iterative. It's not going to be a whole new rethinking. It's just going to be something like a 4S or just a little step up. So the rumor coming out of Foxconn is that there is an NFC on that. It'll come in a later version. So it'll be Google and others that pioneer that.
What do you think of the camera app? I see that I guess we're not going to be able to get anything better for OCR or for that kind of thing with the camera. It just seems to be more editing stuff and, again, knocking more developers out of whack.
Yeah, and I think they said developers could now have access to the LED flash or more access to it. So I don't know if they're opening some things to developers as far as the camera goes that weren't available before. But no, there's certainly nothing right out of the box that's going to improve this for OCR, except for being able to use the volume button, because now you don't have to move your finger in such a strange way to be able to take the picture and make the phone unstable. I think it's a little easier to press the volume up button than it is to double tap an icon at the bottom of the screen to take a picture.
Oh, and you're not going to have to use voice anymore to make it take a picture. Darn.
Right.
Anyway.
That's one thing that I was a little disappointed with, and this could be among the features, because they did say that they were going to have some improved methods of input for those with mobility issues, but I didn't see any talk about more voice activation, voice control, which Android is way ahead of the iPhone in that respect at the moment.
Which stinks, considering that they bought a company that develops voice applications or voice input, voice record type applications.
Yeah, they need to do something with that. And maybe they will, and it just wasn't mentioned among the top 10 features. that they decided to cover today.
A few other things mentioned is built-in at least Twitter login credentials, which could be important as Twitter...
Yawn.
If they cripple all these third-party apps that we're used to, Twitter and other things, that might be of use. Safari enhancements, who knows what those are. Again, the sync reminders, Outlook and Exchange servers. Photo editing, for those of you who can use that. Mail, I don't know if anyone cares about the ability to edit or create RTF files. The ability to search, even server-side, or directly swipe to your inbox. Built-in dictionary, that might be a cool feature. Or your email. So what about you to have the iPad 2? PC-free was the term they used. So is that...
Again, that's. I think it's going to be great because you're going to be able to buy somebody an iPad or whatever and just hand it to them. And, you know, Android's had this since day one. Windows Phone has it as well. Windows Phone 7 has it as well, where you just turn on your phone and it says, hey, you know, what's your login credentials? And then it just starts pulling everything in from there. So it's kind of neat.
Okay, iMessage with encrypted, syncing to all devices, receipts. So yeah, you get a message receipt that I sent this to Mikey at 3:15 and he read it.
Yeah, the iMessage thing sort of annoyed me because it was like FaceTime all over again, where you have something completely proprietary. Okay, great. Now I can get messages on my iPod Touch or whatever, but I have to be in the Apple ecosystem in order to do this kind of stuff. And of course, this is really going to upset the carriers because if people are using iMessage, then they aren't necessarily sending MMSs through the carriers. And now who's going to purchase an unlimited texting plan if they have all of their friends who are as a part of this Apple ecosystem?
Now, how did you feel about, and I know that I'm kind of moving between conversations, but about all this stuff with Pages and, I mean, all of this stuff that, I mean, now we've got Office 365. We've got Google Docs and all of those applications. And we've got this stuff. And there's no interoperability between these. And what Apple has done now is, to my knowledge, there's not an externally accessible API. So now you have to have iDevices to do these things. Or, you know, you have to be part of that whole ecosystem. While the other two are pretty open.
Right. I was very annoyed by that. And I sort of found it funny when they were going through, I believe it was iCloud, which we'll talk about in a bit. And they were kind of running down what each of the competitors does. And here's what Google does. And here's what Amazon does and so on. And they said, we have an application and these guys have web apps. And they tried to play it as if that were an advantage for Apple, and it's not.
Nope. They're putting themselves in an island, and I really think that ultimately that's going to be their detriment. It's that Apple arrogance. It's that, you know, we did it, and what they've done is they've sold consumers on sizzle, and, you know, and consumers have bought the sizzle, but then others like Microsoft, like Google, have come along and taken the sizzle and geekified that sizzle and added to it, educated people. And now you've got people like my little sister, who's a psychologist, who doesn't know anything about it, you know, about this kind of stuff, but says, I don't want an Apple phone because it's too restrictive, because I can do more with my Android phone. And that's not from an accessibility standpoint. That's looking at interfaces, all things being equal, from a sighted perspective. You know, and I think that they better change that.
Apple also seems to be a company that is having a bit of an identity crisis, because here they are gaining in the enterprise.
Sort of.
Well, true, but you're not going to stop using whatever IM client or whatever messaging client or whatever SMS client you're going to do just to work within the iMessage system. So is that meaning that that's straight for a consumer-oriented bent? And I mean, that seems to be, you know, part of it is they want the complexity and they also want the simplicity, but are they missing the target on both in order to keep people behind the walled garden? That remains to be seen.
I think we should all just move to WebOS.
There you go. I'm jumping right on that bandwagon.
Migo.
Yeah, the only final stuff I see here, yeah, connect your iPad 2 wirelessly to your TV. Of course, as we said, we're getting rid of iTunes, but no, we're not, because it's iTunes over Wi-Fi for backup, but that should be out this fall. It does say it will work on the 3GS as well as the 4. It was believed that 3GS would not be included, although I have to believe that some features won't work, will be crippled. It's just my guess. I don't know.
Agreed. Yeah, I don't see all of that porting across at all. I, but we've seen that before. We've seen where some features did not go down to the 3 or the 3G that were iOS 4. So that's not unheard of.
Well, if something requires a gyroscope, there's not really a lot they're going to be able to do. Oh, sure, it'll work on the 3GS that doesn't have one of those.
But speaking as the iPad 1 owner here in the crowd, because Mike has the iPad 2, there were a couple of things that were shot right across us early adopters that, you know, if you have the iPad 2, will happen. And I was like, oh, really? Great. I guess an iPad 2 is in my future because I want to do, you know.
I'll tell you know, one of the things that bugs me here, and I think it's kind of flipped by, but it's a big differentiator for a lot of people. And accessibility aside, and I know that we're an accessibility podcast and all that, but let's just talk about consumer features, this continuous reliance on Wi-Fi. And that is just not the case with Android. Android, it's the same on both platforms. I've been using an Android phone all the time for 3 months now and have never seen my Android say, oh no, you've got to connect to Wi-Fi to do that, you know. And I think that that's huge. That's a big problem, man. I feel if I were paying for a data plan, I'd feel ripped off every time it told me, oh, you can't do that here.
But they've crippled, you know, tethering, right? I mean, I don't think Sprint has, but AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile have all crippled tethering, have they not?
Nothing you can't root around and get to. I mean, it's just a root.
Right, but are you more talking about things like if you have a, let's say, a Navigon update that's 1.6 gigs or whatever, you can't download that on the iPhone because it's over 20 megs. You know, you can't even do that on Wi-Fi.
Yeah, you can do it on Android, and they'll tell you, they'll warn you, hey, are you sure you want to do this?
Blow your plan.
Yeah, you can do it.
Well, sitting here thinking about it, didn't that start with FaceTime, though? Because FaceTime was Wi-Fi only. It seems like that barrier started showing up around
Skype. Well, it started around Skype, actually. Skype was first. And, you know, and you got to wonder at what point are one of these companies going to acquire a carrier? You know, as we become more cloud-centric, people are going to demand that they not be held back by these plans, these data plans that are just ridiculous. And now AT&T, to further patronize us, is coming out with a multiple device data plan.
All of them are. I saw that T-Mobile and Verizon as well.
Yeah,
I think
the family plan.
All of them are doing it. Oh. They're going to that shared plan so they can milk. Have one greedy family member that cranks up the bill for
everyone.
One
teenager downloading crap off of somewhere or whatever, or talking to her boyfriend in the middle of the night on Skype. You know, that'll ruin everything for everybody. You know, it's
the Golden Corral plan. Everybody can go eat at the same trough, you know, and eventually somebody eats all of the french fries. How come there's no french fries? Johnny ate all the french fries.
Insert stampede here.
Correct. I don't know, because that happens right now with DSL too. And when I was thinking about that with iCloud and Google Music and things like that, and I know we'll get to that, but
by next year,
AT&T DSL just went to 150 gigs, you know, and when you start talking about downloading things specifically from iCloud or iTunes or what have you, it's a lot of data that's now starting to eat into it for how many other devices.
Okay, well, let's move to iCloud. There was a lot of talk. What does this mean? They spent $4.5 million to get the iCloud.com domain. What does it mean? First of all, I guess the elimination of the successful, what do I call it? The big failure of MobileMe. I mean, many used it, but $99
quote,
a year.
Success.
No? Yeah.
Oh, please. MobileMe. How about iDisk? I mean, here's, you know, third time's a charm. They're going to fail at this too. I mean,
You know, it's bad when they say, I mean, they literally said in the keynote, now, why would we trust these guys? They're the same people who brought us MobileMe. And so they had to acknowledge how pathetic it was.
I missed that. Oh, that was great.
It was great. So they really are blushing a little bit about MobileMe, and they're kind of like, can we just sweep this under the rug? Look at this. Look, shiny cloud. And it is. I mean, it does a lot of the things that MobileMe does, and it does a lot more than MobileMe did. And best of all, it does it absolutely free.
Well, I want to know what the difference is between automatic and automatic, because he kept saying automatic and then automatic. What's the difference?
Well, when you're using your hands with the apps, you have to look at it.
Just I'm sure, maybe it's OTA-matic, so over-the-air-matic, automatic.
Over-the-air-matic.
That might just, be it.
Maybe that's it.
That might be it. That might be their
or
new party
Or maybe it's
line
not, and I'm...
So let me ask you this. I saw, okay, you're going to have contacts, calendar, and mail. We could talk specifically about what that means, but I like the concept of calendar sharing. So folks have been complaining about the inability to do that with Gmail. Might iOS become a platform for people to start sharing calendar?
No, you can share calendars on Gmail.
Well, sure you can, but...
I'm talking about accessibility.
Oh, accessibility. Yeah, that's a different story.
Yeah, and this really made me excited because I've wanted an accessible way to have a shared calendar that was synced across multiple devices. And it looks like this is it, at least for the people that are inside this ecosystem. Yet again, you know, here we are with the walled garden. So I found that attractive. And the idea that you can have apps that you've purchased on one device, and before now you'd have to get them or download them or do whatever on another device as well. Now you can view your purchase history and say, oh, I want that here, and download it from the cloud. And it does that. You also get shared documents, of course, using Pages and...
The rest of us call that Dropbox.
I know. Yeah. Well, there is AirDrop for that's no, a lion. They call it AirDrop, and then this is sort of similar. But yeah, it's just like Dropbox. Hey, look, they had a good idea. I think we'll take that.
He even acknowledged it when he was doing the run up to it, and that was the whole thing about you get 5 gigs for free, and it was like, well, I guess that's better than 2. There's a little bit of also some other shoes to drop when he was talking about the photos and pictures and stuff that they'll be up there for 30 days. That was a little weird.
1,000 photos or 30 days of data, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but is it and or?
No, unless you put them into an album. My understanding was you get 1,000 pictures, up to 1,000 pictures. They stay there. They'll stay there for up to 30 days, and then they'll go. Unless you move those pictures into an album, and then they'll stay there forever. So I guess the whole idea is you have about 1,000 pictures to play with. You have kind of a 1,000 picture basket that you can play with, or a desktop. And once you arrange them and make them permanent into an album, then they kind of stay there and they'll take that. But he didn't say that there was any limitation on how many albums you could have, how big those albums could be. Because, I mean, hey, I could just take 1,000 pictures, put them into one album, and now what?
Yeah. And I can't help but think that there's going to be some type of hardware play at some point for a new time capsule that's iCloud friendly, or something that's going to revert it back to local storage. Because he was about today cutting the PC era is dead, and for 10 years we've had this paradigm. But at the same time, that data center, if it became popular in North Carolina, is only going to hold so much. I'm just not sure. There was a lot of mixed messages in there that I'm not... I mean, we'll get more details as we get closer to the release, but I'm not sure about some of this.
3 data centers does not a huge infrastructure make, by the way.
Ask Amazon.
It doesn't.
Yeah, that's it for temporary storage. I'm just wondering, with a wireless sharing and wireless backups daily, what effect that's going to have on battery drain.
Alert, your battery is like so dead and stuff.
There goes me battery.
Oh, first of all, most of the cloud stuff you do right now is not daily. I mean, that's kind of that's so 20th century. I mean, it's instant now. If you do something, especially those of us who like live in exchange or whatever, who have lived in exchange, I mean, exchange gives you instant backup of stuff. One of the coolest things I love to do in exchange, I hate entering contact information on my cell phone, so I'll go and enter it on my PC and just then pick up the cell phone and call the person, because it goes right there.
Right. And luckily that's going to be the case with iCloud too, but it wasn't made very clear what it is that is being backed up daily, because first you get the message of it just works, it syncs and everything is everywhere, and you pick up whatever iDevice or Apple thingy that you have, and your information will be on it. And yet...
Pick up your Apple thingy.
And yet, you still have to back up something daily. And it would they kind of mumbled a little bit. Back up blah, blah, blah data. You know, what else are you backing up? We don't know.
And what's 3G versus Wi-Fi? I mean, then they talked about PhotoStream. Okay, that's 3G, but is everything else limited to Wi-Fi? I was unclear on that.
Well, PhotoStream, you know, PhotoStream is deceptive. What the hell is a PhotoStream? You can't stream a picture. You know, I mean, that's just an Appleism, because you don't stream pictures, man. I mean, you may push them. That's called a web page. You know, that's not streaming. I mean, you know, that's deceptive at minimum, you know, or misleading. But I got to go back. I tweeted earlier and I'll say it again. As far as I'm concerned, this is called Mobile Me Too. And, you know, that's what it comes down to. Amazon, I think the real battle here ultimately is going to be between Amazon and Google. Apple is going to be always the runner-up, the always late to the show. You know, they're going to be the cloud on training wheels. And if that's what you want, hey, God bless you. That's great. That's what you should do. And, you know, and then ultimately you'll graduate to a real device that'll give you real flexible options later.
In some respects, I agree with you, but there is one thing that Apple absolutely did right, and that is the iTunes Music Match. So you have
a license to steal. Sorry.
Yes, well, that aside,
go ahead.
You have these songs that you have purchased from iTunes, and I'll be honest, I have like three of them. Everything else I get from Amazon MP3 because I just like it better. Those things will get synced to all your devices automatically, so you don't have to worry about, I have this on my iPhone and I don't have it on my iPad or whatever. But for that stuff that you have ripped yourself or
ripped off.
Acquired in some manner.
Acquired. Yes. Yeah, that's the word he used.
Then
obtained.
You, yes, indeed. For that stuff, we have iTunes Music Match, and it's going to be $24.95 a year, I think. So rather than having to upload all this stuff, which is going to take forever and going to take up storage, which is not really necessary, iTunes will actually scan your library and say, oh, I recognize this. Here, have the 256-bit rendition of that.
And store it over on Amazon.
Oh, did I just say bit? I meant, anyway.
But you know what's interesting, though, and going back to conspiracy theory, so can you just see the RIAA sending you a document saying, we're going to sue you because you've been stealing music, or you could go sign up for this Music Match service from Apple for $24.95 a year, and we'll be cool.
Well, you know, it's like, it's the way Canadians do it, because Canadians have the tax on them on media to burn things like blank CDs and stuff like that. Because that's kind of the way that they deal with quote-unquote piracy for the Canadian copyrights, is that you're paying money back to artists through each CD that you're buying or blank media and what have you. But someone on MacBreak Weekly actually said, wouldn't it be interesting that, you know, the RIAA seeds out a torrent site with a specific, you know, file that has a watermark in it that, you know, then could turn around with this Apple software, which is a lot like Last.fm Scrabbler, to then say, oh, you know what? We noticed that you got that site from that song from this site, you know, that kind of thing. There's a lot of gray areas once again here. I hate to be the guy who's standing in between both sides here.
Well, but look at all the music it's not going to port. I have 63,000 songs. I know not all those songs are going to port. You want to buy these or?
Well, what it's going to do, though, I'm sure it's going to use some sort of database like I forget what the name, Michael. You and I have used them in the past. When we
I know what you're talking about.
That matches, takes little sound bits and uploads them to a server, yeah, and then tells you what the name of your song is. So it may very well have some really obscure music that you're not, you know, that you may not think is available because it's not easily acquirable, unless it's like from your neighbor, you know, your garage, you know, the neighbor's garage.
Well,
band,
yeah, right? Obviously you're not going to be able to buy that from iTunes or match it to anything. But I think this is a much smarter approach than Amazon or Google, where you do have to upload all that stuff. So in that respect,
No, they trumped the music and they trumped everybody else on that one. That's a serious. They changed the face of the music downloading forever today by doing that. I really think that's a home run if I ever seen one.
We had 15,000 interns with SoundHound holding up their iPhones to all sorts of music. And that's how we came up with the ability to scan your library.
What does a SoundHound look like? Just saying.
He's got big ears.
What does it sound like? Does it snuffle? Does it...
Maybe it growls like a lion.
It could be. Although, you know, I think they really should have named Lion Space Cat or something. No. But they kept it in all of the discussions about Lion today. Everything was about launch pad and mission control, and they were talking about the windows, and the windows just fly away or they fly back down onto the launch pad, and so everything was very space oriented.
It's funny how we've come back full circle. You know, back early on we were all about multitasking, all about transparency, and as a trainer I had one heck of a time explaining to blind people how a window was in the foreground, but it was transparent and you could see other things behind it. And when myself as a blind person, I couldn't understand it. Now we've come back to, by the way, people, we give you full screen applications. And guess what? When you want to go somewhere, you just go click on the list of applications and it pops up. So we've gone full circle now to no more multitasking in that type of manner. What do you think about that?
Single tasking on my Commodore 64 was never so great.
Well, I like that you can actually, it preserves the state of the apps as their last use, but you mentioned mission control, which they said.
I don't like that.
I don't either. I don't like that either.
Mac Defender will love it.
You're right. Well, there's a quote from the sitcom The Big Bang Theory, and the guy Sheldon says, Windows 7 is more user-friendly than Windows Vista. I don't like that. And this is kind of how I feel about that. Is that, you know, sometimes you want to reboot. Sometimes you want to start from scratch because you've really screwed something up and you don't know how to get that thing back to the way it was before. Now it's going to be, you know, it's going to pop up in exactly the same screwed up state that it was before, and you're going to have to live with it.
Well, that's like the music, you know, when you play a song and if the next time you go back to it, if you don't have your player set the right way, it'll start playing where you left off.
Right.
You
know?
So you're listening, it comes up in the middle of the song.
One of the first troubleshooting things you do when working with Windows is to turn off the autosave, is to go back and get rid of Windows Restore, because whatever virus is there or whatever's corrupted will be back in your restore files, you know. So you want to wipe out your restore settings, or you want to, you know, come up with a clean boot. So I'm hoping that this will not carry across. This will not be an attack vector, because that's what it feels like, is that, okay, now I can hide in ready state or save state or whatever. And that's exactly what this is. Windows has had ready state for a while in the server area. So there's a little bit more photocopying going on today. But I'm just hoping that doesn't get exploited somehow, because we saw with Mac Defender how many people thought, oh, I'm fine, I'm on a Mac, I don't get viruses.
This does save the deltas. We're talking about saving files now, not necessarily application states, but it does save the differences between what you had before and what you have now, and you have this nifty little interface where you can sort of go through and you've got versioning. So if you really loved something that you had 6 revisions ago and you think you've lost it, you can go back and get that, which I think is kind of cool.
Windows 7. Sorry. Sorry.
Yeah. I gotta say, for the record, I mean, just because a lot of people that see me come out here on the podcast, they may think, oh, well, where's Calvo's head at about this or that? And does Serotech, is Serotech turning away from its love of Apple or whatever? And no, I still feel that Apple forever changed the world of accessibility in consumer devices. I still believe that they've not received even anywhere near enough recognition for that. For that, as a blind person, I'm forever grateful. A lot of my statements are oriented around being a consumer, not around accessibility. I still think that Apple kicks butt much, much more than any company on the market right now with accessibility when it comes to consumer devices, hands down. And I just thought that was important because I've been beating up on Apple a lot, and I want to separate the two, at least in from people when they hear me. I gripe about consumer stuff, but from an accessibility standpoint, Apple still kicks butt more than anybody, and I don't think there's anybody on this panel that would disagree with that.
No, but I also think we have to recognize that accessibility, unfortunately, isn't everything for all users, and so we talk pretty bluntly here because that's the way other users are going to approach this, and accessibility aside, we have to go where the masses are, and Apple certainly made that available
for
us. I appreciate being able to go into Best Buy and pick up stuff that talks at a great price, but what are other, sighted people using? That's what we also have to focus on. We can't be short-sighted either. Ba-dum-bum. Sorry.
Speaking of sighted people, there was one thing that actually surprised me a great deal about Lion. And they were talking about, we just brought multi-touch to Lion. And, we're building in trackpads to all our notebooks and et cetera, et cetera. But what they were describing, when I think about the Mac, I'm able to use the same gestures that I use on the phone on the Mac and do things like scrolling, et cetera, et cetera. And I sort of assumed that for the sighted folks, it was a very gesture-rich environment there as well on the Mac. And it appears that it's not, because much of what they talked about was bringing things like, let's get rid of the scroll bar and make it so you can just kind of swipe your windows away and, fling them into Never Never Land, and then you can swipe them back and so on. And those are, again, things that I thought were already there, but apparently they are not.
They are not. That's one of the things that has been interesting for us to argue about in UI meetings at Serotech is because I've wanted to flatten a lot of the UIs and make them look more iOS-ish, because you're right, Ricky, the gestures for blind people from our perspective are much more advanced than for sighted people on Mac. Now they're finally coming into their own, and I think that from a UI perspective, Lion is going to be a huge quantum leap for sighted people. I've not played with it enough from a blindness perspective to play with VoiceOver to deal with Lion, but I know that there's a number of developer builds out there, and there's more coming. I think, when is it going to be released? It should be released soon, isn't it? It's going to be like $25.
It's going to be in July.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yep, $29, and boy, were people ever quick to point out on Twitter that you were wrong, Joe Steinkamp. You were wrong.
This is true.
What were you wrong about?
About how much it was going to cost to upgrade to Lion.
I promoted the idea that it was going to be $129 on Twitter, at Ranger Station, by the way. So
shameless plug.
Ranger Station. Shameless plug. But in the defense of $29, let me say this. You have to do $29 or face fragmentation. You can't have people, because there are people right now who've hung back on Leopard for whatever reason, and weren't able, well, if they were PowerPCs, then they had a reason, but they don't have the ability to jump to Snow Leopard, and Apple can't have three versions of an OS running out there for developers, otherwise they'd start to look a lot like Microsoft with people.
No, that's why you can only get it through the App Store, so you can only integrate from Snow Leopard.
What I'm wondering about, and somebody may have answered this on other coverage that I wasn't watching, but I'm assuming that there's going to be a Lion recovery partition or something like that, because what if your machine is completely hosed and you can't get to the App Store? You can't just boot from a DVD now and install it. What do you do?
That's the question, because I want to be able to make my own bootable DVD from the 3 gig that I download from the App Store.
Well, maybe what they'll do is they'll give you like a little mini way of just enough OS to connect back to the App Store, and then it'll pull everything down after you log in with your ID, including your apps and all that. Or maybe it's that new time machine that Joe's talking about, the time capsule, who knows what Steve has up his sleeve, but Steve has up his sleeve.
You were a poet and didn't know it.
Well, look at it from the enterprise perspective. If you decided to go crazy Mac on your enterprise, that's a lot of downloading you're going to have to do individually if you don't have a way to be able to do that from an enterprise perspective of walking around with a disk. There's a lot of crazy ideas here, and I'm not sure I mean, again, this is more consumer focused than it is anything else. And plus, they can track how many copies of Lion went out. I mean, to be honest with you, they don't make money off of OS. You get the OS built into the computer, and them selling it at $29, you know, is kind of making up some development.
Considering the OS is built on free BSD, yeah. Thank you very much. Uh-huh.
So, you know, for the long run, they're not making money on this, and it's why the numbers look, you know, Windows 7 has been bought X many of times. Yeah, you kind of sort of have to buy it. You get it on your Mac. So there's a difference as far as that's concerned, but you got to get everybody on the same platform, and whether it be from support or development or whatever. And so making it $29, you know, avoids having the Android fragmentation factor, which I think everybody's going to look at and say, ooh, I don't want that.
But since you can use on all authorized devices, which it said five for $29.95, and then later it said, Steve said you get 10 devices, so...
No, that was for the music. Yeah, that was for the music.
Right, you can, yeah, I think it's just five for Lion. Yeah.
Right, so if you have six devices, it comes back and tells you need two copies of Lion. I wonder if...
Yeah, we got to tell Patrick, every time we say Lion, to put a little roar in the background or something, and it'll just become a... Yeah, something.
Should have a really wimpy cat meow or something instead.
So, you know, that's a very interesting, that leads us into fragmentation is a very interesting thing because, I mean, in the last week, guys, we've seen Google come out and talk about things with creepy Eric Schmidt talking about making his little statements, not on behalf of Google, but making statements. We've had Google say things.
He was wrong.
Yeah. Yes.
He was wrong too, just like I was. He was wrong.
Yeah. Okay. They're in good company.
Oh, now you got people on your side. All right.
That's great. Yeah. That's right. Me and Eric Schmidt, we were wrong. No, we're good.
The thing is that we've had Google come out. We've had Microsoft talk about Windows 8 last week. Now we had this thing going on with WWDC today. We've got Android announcements all over the place. We had Chrome OS and of course, the Chromium, which is the open source version of Chrome OS. Fragmentation seems to be the name of the game. And the one thing that's holding all this together is the cloud. And it's going to be very interesting to see how people, you know, how these companies differentiate themselves, unlike Microsoft, where Windows 8 is kind of cloud connected, but it's not. There's kind of a Win32-ish basis to it. It's Windows 7 on steroids, but there's so much more when you look at this immersive UI that they're doing in Windows 8. It's amazing because it is all, everybody thought, oh, it's going to be proprietary. Nope, it's all HTML5, and the whole idea from an AT point of view is, you know, AT's grown up. There's enough accessibility APIs out there, be it ARIA, be it iAccessible 2, be it UI automation, that there is absolutely no reason for any AT provider to have to use an off-screen model to hold accessibility together. Now, I mean, obviously that's a utopian view that everybody's going to use these APIs, but it should be the way it's done. And to throw their hat in the ring, just been released today, not by us, but an unauthorized copy of Windows 8, a demonstration of, yes, you guessed it, the Windows 8 screen reader. And what is that going to do to the AT industry? I would submit that the screen reader now is officially dead. Ideas?
We're having a moment of silence for the dead screen reader, I guess.
And now, each in his own way, let us celebrate, or let us regrettably announce, the death of this Windows screen reader. Now, actually, I mean, it's a big thing because this is a big deal for Microsoft. It's still called Narrator, which is hilarious.
Narrator HD.
And we'll have a link in the show notes so you can go here. The review, they actually ran System Access, and System Access was the one that ran best out of all of them. And I think it's because I think the jury's still out if they're going to be mirror drivers in Windows 8 or not. I don't know. Microsoft is officially being mum to us and to everybody else. Any information that we're gleaning from what we're seeing out in the wild. But the new screen reader sounds pretty cool. And if you kind of sit back and put two and two together, well, you realize there's an app store, there's HTML5, which is JavaScript, So if there's a screen reader and there's open APIs to that and there's scripting and there's an app store, that makes for some very, very interesting combinations.
Yes, it really does. And you were talking earlier about how Apple seemed to be sort of taking a Me Too approach, or everybody is approaching the cloud in their own way and what's going to come along to differentiate each of these companies from each other. I think that is going to be a really important question in the AT industry as well, because if you have a screen reader built in to Windows and it can do, we don't know yet what all it can do, but if it can do a fair bit, then if these companies, you know, any AT company who is in the screen reader business, if they want to stay there, they're going to have to do something to differentiate themselves and make it worthwhile to say, yes, I know that Microsoft has something built in, but here's what we do better, and that's why you should pay us.
Yeah, but Ricky, if you think about that, though, you're going to buy a $900 screen reader. Heck, let's shoot some arrows at Serotech. You're going to buy a $500 screen reader or pay $9.95 a month just for your screen reader, even if you go on our rental program. For what? When somebody should be able to script whatever weaknesses there are and then sell a $2 or $3 app on the App Store or give it away for Microsoft, for Windows 8, and that's the end of that. Now, there's going to be a lot of legacy out there for us and all the other guys to enjoy for a couple of years, but that's going to die out ultimately.
Right. But, you know, initially, each company is going to have to do some scrambling to say, why are we still here? And, you know, if we shouldn't be here, we better find another way to make money.
Yeah, I think that's happening with certain companies. Others, some of them are trying to reinvent themselves by creating iOS applications and stuff, but there's just such a huge paradigm shift, not so much in the mainstream where I think that, you know, computing and access to information and stuff has evolved. I think that some of the things that, for example, Serotech's been talking about for a number of years, cloud-based applications and things like that, where we've diversified ourselves. And yeah, to a certain degree, this is a shameless plug for what Serotech does, but you got to call a spade a spade. There is no other company in this industry that's doing what we do. And I think that that's going to be to the detriment of others in this industry, because what the heck are they going to do when the screen reader has been their Cadillac and has been their flagship product for the last 10 or 15 or 20 years? What are they going to do now? You know, are they going to continue to sell overpriced, you know, blind ghetto hardware? Are they going to continue to try and, you know, and eke out an existence with shrinking government contracts? What is it? And to the consumer, are you going to continue to invest in those sinking ships?
Well, you know, with HTML5 and the other things that we've talked about, looking at it from an enterprise perspective, if you can get apps now to work on the two major operating system holders with their built-in screen readers, that kind of defines accessibility in another way, or however you want to put it, for 508 and things like that, because the drive will be.
And interestingly enough, by the way, the keystrokes are very similar in both screen readers. In VoiceOver, you've got the command and the, you know, you've got the VO keys. And in Windows 8, they use the Windows key and the Alt key.
Interesting.
In conjunction. So, well, you know, I mean, the reality is, people, well, I mean, and Serotech did it.
Yeah.
I mean, we our keystrokes are, you know, shamelessly Jaws-ish in similarity. You know, just
and why not?
Why
you
not?
Find something that works.
Absolutely.
Use it.
You know, the reason, I mean, you don't see Ford putting their gas pedal in a different place than Toyota, do you? I mean, the gas pedal is the gas pedal. And that's why you cannot copyright, you know, keystrokes or button placement on something. And that's why we've not been sued for that.
Again.
You know, and I don't believe that Microsoft is going to be sued for making very similar keystrokes in Narrator for Windows 8, you know, to VO commands over in VoiceOver. I think that that's going to be a blessing for trainers, a blessing for consumers. And if they embrace the gestures thing on, you know, as far as the touchpads, even better.
I'm not a fan of holding two keys down, though, for working with people like in the VA or people who are missing digits and things like that.
I've never really understood. It's a step in the right direction.
But I agree with you. I agree with you.
Yeah, you can lock. You can lock down. There's a way in iOS and there's a way in Windows 8, which is demonstrated to lock down.
Yeah, you've got quick nav.
What about the UI? Things like the Start menu and Windows Explorer, and I was talking more ribbons.
I've not been able to listen to enough of the demonstration because it's been just such a crazy day, and it just came out this morning, and I saw it on Twitter, and it was like, whoa, this is cool. So I went and checked it out, but it is really, I know that the ribbon is still there in Windows 8, and this thing, of course, works with the ribbon because the ribbon uses UI automation. So, I mean, there are within the operating system, if you've got standard applications in the operating system embracing these open protocols, UI automation and such, you've got HTML5 in this immersive environment that embraces ARIA and those types of things, you know, you've got a fully accessible, or the possibility of a fully accessible solution out of the box as well. And that's huge. I mean, JavaScript is going to be the big deal because now, you know, I was having a discussion with somebody earlier this morning and they said, well, what's going to happen, you know, if the major screen reader manufacturers stop selling their product and now all of a sudden we're out there in nowhere land? The cool thing is that JavaScript is easy. There are a number of great JavaScript hackers already in the blind community. We can write for ourselves. Thank you very much. And now we're able to communicate through the internet. And I really believe that Serotec, which is not based on $995 a copy for our profit margins, or even NVDA, which is an open source project on Windows, can pick up wherever any of these other products leave off. I don't think that there is the reason to pay hundreds of dollars for a screen reader anymore.
The cool thing is that there's going to be a public beta probably this year. So everybody will get a chance to play with it. If you have a Windows 7 machine, it should run really well. Paul Thurrott talks about this on the latest Windows Weekly podcast. We'll put a link in the show notes.
Excellent podcast.
Where he goes over a lot.
Very gripping.
He goes over a lot of it, a lot of ideas about it, a lot of he confirms a lot of things, even mentioned some things that kind of sort of didn't come out at the D9 conference last week. So if you are back into Windows or at least considering, hey, should I really get off XP? And really honest, you should.
This is
a good opportunity to take a look at what's coming up in Windows
8. We're gonna definitely start looking at Windows 8 from a developer perspective in September is when we get our version to play with. It's been announced. And then I think right around January, February, we'll probably start to see some form of public beta.
And release sometime probably fall 2012 is what's being said.
2012, so,
and that
yeah.
falls in line with the estimates because they said it would be 3 years from the release of Windows 7, so that's on target.
If there's anything for listeners of this podcast to come back from this with is, listen, you know, the bottom isn't going to fall out of accessibility overnight. It's just not going to happen. Nobody's going to shut their doors and say, well, we're done, and that's it, and leave everybody in the dark. There's just too many people depending on this stuff, and there's still money on the table to be had. But the fact is that as consumers, we need to reweigh our options. We need to go back and look at our accessibility toolbox and say, do I still need this tool in here? Can I replace it with a better one? Can I replace it with a lower cost one? Is, you know, are one of these iOS devices or one of these Android devices or, you know, or any of these devices, you've got Chrome OS coming around with these Chromebooks that are actually accessible out of the box. And we'll be reviewing one of those in an upcoming podcast. I'm getting one in a couple of weeks and we'll definitely be talking about it. You know, there's a number of solutions out there. And let me tell you, blind consumer, it's time for you to take your accessible future into your own hands. Stop depending on somebody to tell you.
I think the bottom line is what people should take away from this is that we have to learn to embrace change. I've had a number of conversations with blind people who say, I don't deal with change well. I'm used to pressing the same keystrokes to get the same results all of the time. I don't want anything about my experience to change. And I think that attitude is going to have to become obsolete, at least to some extent, because there is change, whether you like it or not. You can't cling to XP forever, that kind of thing.
80-year-old people using iPads, for heaven's sakes. I mean, 80 years ago, 70 years ago, when they were growing up, they're lucky to have a pen and a paper. You know, I mean, weren't they writing on tablets back then? You know, stone tablets? I mean, everybody's having to deal with change. It's not just blind people. You know, it's everybody.
Microsoft, at their keynote today for the Xbox 360, showed a Sesame Street game running with Kinect. And we've talked about Kinect on the podcast a lot. That's a device that is really starting to work for people, be it with finger motion, which they also announced today, which has some accessibility advantages to it, to have individual finger recognition for sign language and ASL.
You imagine you give your PC the finger and it gets mad at you and shuts down or
See
it reboots. Yeah,
Kinect can come to the PC and you can openly hack it. I did say that it made gesture control rather interesting for many reasons. So I mean, there's going to be a lot of change, and somebody growing up today, not necessarily me as an old fart computer user, but for somebody growing up, you guys who are in your teens, you guys who are just now entering college, you're in a multiple operating system universe. You're in a multiple screen reader universe, and that's something that we've never had to consider before. And sometimes you're going to need a hammer and nails and wood to build a house, and that could be three different screen readers, and that's just something you've come along with. But for some of the rest of us, it's something we're going to have to get used to.
This is the final thing I want to talk about, especially since you, Mike Calvo, are here with us today. You talked earlier about AT companies having to diversify themselves, and you've spent resources and a little cash on creating iBlink Radio for the Android operating system. You believe in it, and you certainly believe in multi-platforms. So talk about that a little bit.
I think that iBlink is an essential tool. It's become an essential tool. And by the way, just for the record, the reason it's called iBlink, yes, we call each other blinks. Blind people do that. And it could be, you know, for the conspiracy theorists among us that, you know, we were sending out some weird cryptid message. No, it's that we give you information at the blink of an eye, and that's it. We just didn't feel like if we wrote it as iBlink, E-Y-E blink, that would even be more patronizing to a certain degree. So it was not intentional. I hope that the name of the application does not stop anyone from using the application, because it is a great resource. Michael has put together one of the most comprehensive lists of resources that I've ever seen as a blind person, both as an existing blind person that has been blind for the last 43 years, or for a newly blinded blind person, which I've met a few and I've been able to point their family members and them at these resources available on this. Don't let the name keep you from recommending it. Don't let the name keep you from using it. I think that the application is invaluable, and it's free, people. Go get it. We've got over 10,000 users of it on the iOS platform at this time, and we've got you know, a lot of people starting to download it on Android. And as accessibility per platform permits, we will continue to add platforms. That is iBlink is here to stay, and we hope to see more and more access to things like SamNet and things like that, not only on Android and iOS, but on other platforms like the Mac and like we've done with DSP. We are truly a platform agnostic company, and we want to remain as such. I believe that the future is mobility and the cloud, and that's where this company's headed. An accessible mobile lifestyle, an accessible digital lifestyle that consists of having your information, your accessibility anywhere.
And keep an eye on, or an ear on, iBlink Radio for convention coverage. The ACB and NFB, and if hopefully we can maybe get some folks to report in from Sight Village over in the UK, that would be awesome as well. But keep that as your
portal. We're trying to get kind of an on the spot reporter type of feature into both platforms in time. I don't know if we're going to make it. We've got a lot on our development schedule right now, but we're trying to get one of those, you know, private, you know, right through the app where you can record something and send it to us. But if not, feel free to record it and just email it to us, or send us a link to it on Dropbox or whatever. It's probably better if you send us a link to it.
Yeah, we seriously want to hear other voices,
please,
besides our own.
Or the ones in my head. Or you can call the Blab line. Don't forget,
right.
We have the Blab line. Michael, what's that number, my friend?
That is 866-997-2522. It's good for North America. 866-997-BLAB. Or resources at serotalk.com is the email address. We get a lot of great input there. So I think that's going to put the wraps on podcast 69, but we hope you've found this information to be valuable or invaluable.
Hey, and if you disagree, send us an email. Tell us we're full of it, or tell us it's great.
That's
right. I mean, we want to hear from you. We want you to argue with us. We want to open up that dialogue. That's what we're here to do.
You can send an email saying Joe is wrong at content@serotech.com. or contact us on Twitter at Serotalk or at Mike Calvo, at Ranger Station, at Ricky_Enger, or just look for us anywhere on Twitter retweeting each other's tweets as incestuous
or as Serotech.
That is correct.
Or Serotech for the latest Serotech news.
Serotech, the official feed.
By the way, you know what I heard, guys? I hear we got some YouTube videos coming.
Ooh. We might.
What does that mean?
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us in 2 weeks as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.